Welcome to the Hirschfeld Century Podcast. I am Catherine Eastman, the Archives Manager of the Al Hirschfeld Foundation.
And I'm David Leopold, the Creative Director.
And we are back for a very special episode, an episode I've been wanting to make for several years now.
Yes, I don't know why we haven't done it earlier.
I don't know why either. It's a big story.
One of the more important stories in the Hirschfeld tapestry.
But it's a big story, an important story, and I am so excited to have you all listen to it, because it's one of my favorite Hirschfeld stories. It really does have a lot of different things in it. It's got a big twist in the middle of it
right.
that I love, that you don't see coming, unless you've heard the story before.
Of course. It's the decisive moment in Hirschfeld's career. It's the moment before and after when you look at his work. And of course, we're talking about his trip to Bali in 1932. And what that did to his work. You know, we're going to talk about who he was before he got there and what happened after.
Yeah, yeah. So I guess let's just start there. Let's start with Hirschfeld before Bali.
So where was he in 1931? Well, Al Hirschfeld was a painter, first and foremost. After the Selznick fiasco, he goes to Paris, as he says, to get rid of the commercial side of his work. He travels in Italy and North Africa and does paintings there.
Now, this is earlier, though. This is not 1931.
No, this is 1925, 1926. He's in Paris. He's taken an 8-year lease on a studio in Paris, and a studio that he will return to again and again over those 8 years. He's interested in painting, both oil painting and watercolor painting. The drawings that he does when he's in North Africa in 1926, when he comes back to New York, he takes a class at the Art Students League on etching and tries to translate some of those drawings into etchings. But as he said, you know, his first published caricature is in April 1925 of Sidney Chaplin in a film called The Man on the Box. And so he's been doing the caricatures, but it's just a way to pay, as he says, the room rent. And even though he considered himself a painter, he would write that more and more the line made undeniable demands on my time and energies. So there's a definite tug of war going on within him. But in 1931, he's in several New York newspapers doing theatrical caricatures. And he's working for at least six film studios, doing mostly caricature, but also straight drawing. There, we have a wonderful example of an MGM film from 1927 called On the Boulevard, where we have a straight drawing by Hirschfeld, a representational drawing, as well as a caricature. And that's really just being the versatile artist, giving the art directors whatever they need. But again, it's the commercial side of his work. He doesn't see this as what gets him up in the morning. It's the painting that gets him up in the morning.
Right. Even though when you and I talk about the 20s, we don't talk about the paintings at all. We talk about the caricatures. That's what we're interested in. And I think most people who know Hirschfeld will think of him as a caricaturist even in the 20s. But that's not how he viewed himself yet.
No.
He wasn't Hirschfeld the caricaturist we know yet.
Exactly. We talk about the other we talk about the caricatures because they're of popular culture, which everybody can relate to. We're not going to get into the agitated brushstroke of Al Hirschfeld's watercolors or oil paintings. But he had exhibitions of his paintings in New York, St. Louis, Paris, and Chicago. And as he would write later, I was beginning to believe that I was really Hirschfeld. The assured life of a successful easel painter was within my easy grasp. So when the Depression hits, it doesn't affect Hirschfeld financially, oddly enough, because he's not invested in the stock market. But of course, it does affect a lot of his friends. His regular Chinese food date, Fred Allen, loses almost everything he has.
Everything.
George Kaufman loses money in the stock market crash, although he would later say that's what happens when you take stock advice from the Marx Brothers.
Probably not a good idea.
No. This is where Harpo is the good one. He stays silent.
Yeah. Definitely don't listen to Chico about the stock market. No.
But the scene that he sees outside his window, the world that he's living in, is getting pretty sad.
Sure.
You know, he sees a lot of his friends.
Now, are Broadway shows less?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You know, is everybody kind of tightening their purse strings, and he's not getting as many, requests?
No, his requests remain fairly constant.
Okay.
Because that's why he's lucky. Because the newspapers and the film studios still need drawings to promote their product.
Gotcha.
It's the only way to do it. Print is the only way to promote anything. So that's what I'm saying. Hirschfeld not only is not affected by the crash because he had money in it, but his income remains fairly constant because he's still doing the same work that he was doing before the stock market crash.
Right.
But the world that he's living in is drastically different. There are people, there are Hoovervilles. You know, there's people living out on the street. He's seeing what everybody else is seeing, which is a country that is really hurting and doesn't have enough.
And he was depressed by the Depression.
He was indeed.
And so what does he do?
Well, he had read Mutiny on the Bounty. And he and his wife, Flo, decide they should go to Tahiti and so he could paint.
Whoa, 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 whoa. Who is Flo?
Flo is an Earl Carroll's showgirl that Al marries in 1927.
Because everyone told him he shouldn't marry her.
Right. Against everyone's advice.
Yes.
And indeed, they were very different people. They honeymoon in Moscow for about 5 months. And they do a little traveling again in Africa, in Baghdad, and, you know, all kinds of places. He had hoped that she would become a writer and that he could illustrate things that she wrote. But, you know, so she's a part of his life. And
they're still married in 1931.
Oh, yes.
Still together. They're going to go on another honeymoon now, several years later, to Tahiti.
Tahiti. Yeah. So they go on a ship there. They leave in September 1931. The last drawings that appear in the paper are, there are two drawings on September 27th, 1931. In the Herald Tribune for two shows that opened on Broadway and that were opening on Broadway that week. And then we don't hear from Hirschfeld in theater drawings for almost a year.
Yeah, spoiler alert. We haven't gotten there yet.
So they go to Tahiti and...
Because he's read Mutiny on the Bounty.
He's read Mutiny on the Bounty.
And Paul Gauguin, of course, goes to Tahiti.
Well, he wouldn't have been aware of that.
Yeah, right. I think it was a pretty... equivalent would be.
Well, it sounds like an idyllic world
right.
He would have lots to paint. He hasn't realized that his subject is people. You know, we have a painting from Tahiti that is a lush landscape, but it's one of the last pure landscapes that he would ever do in his career. And as you probably, if you've listened to this podcast before, know that when Hirschfeld gets to Tahiti, he is a little, he's not there very long when he realizes how inauthentic the culture is.
The natives were playing Irving Berlin songs on ukulele.
It's very true. some natives take Hirschfeld out to a place in which Paul Gauguin has carved the door frame to the structure. And he's carved in it 2 + 2 = 4. And Hirschfeld is like, what is this? You know, it doesn't make any sense to him. And
facade.
It is. And he's surrounded by Westerners who have come to Tahiti to live the Gauguin life, to live the Mutiny on the Bounty existence. And the ship would come once a month and people would get off and they would look normal. And a month later, they would show up at the ship with their sleeves torn off of their shirts and, you know, funky little hats and, you know, trying to make that they were noble savages.
Right. I'm going to be honest, this sounds a lot like Bali today.
Yeah. Could be. He hates it. Hirschfeld hates it. And he thinks of his friend Covarrubias because Covarrubias, like Hirschfeld, marries a showgirl. The Rosa Rolinda.
Mm.
And they do the same thing that Hirschfeld and his wife do. They head out for an exotic locale, and they choose Bali. And so Hirschfeld writes to Covarrubias in Bali saying how horrible. He refers to the letters as misanthropic, you know, because he really, I don't think he had any problem with the island itself. His problem was with the people on it.
Right.
And Covarrubias writes back that he had found paradise on earth, that Bali was this incredible place that he had fallen in love with. And that he wanted to write about, you know, he wanted to write what is still one of the definitive texts on the island of Bali.
And Covarrubias is a caricaturist.
I would argue the caricaturist.
The caricaturist and the caricaturist who introduced Hirschfeld to caricature in 1924 for the first time. Definitely. So they're friends. He's already had a big impact on Hirschfeld. But now he wants to write this, like you said, definitive text on Bali.
Yeah, and we're talking about guys. Hirschfeld's 28. Covarrubias is 25.
Oh my gosh.
Okay, these are young men who have done very well so far in their careers. They're trying to sort of push themselves further. And what Covarrubias says to Hirschfeld is, listen, I'm going to go back to New York and try to get a Guggenheim Fellowship that I can do the work, spend the time here and do the work. But if you can make it over here, I'll leave everything. He had a house that was really a compound. Mm-hmm. He would leave his dishes, his bicycle. What he hadn't realized is all the quote-unquote houseboys that he had remained because they had nowhere else to go. And Hirschfeld says, I'm on my way. And he trades a painting to a ship captain and by way of Madagascar, ends up on the island of Bali in February 1932. Mm. And he knows almost from the minute he gets there that things are different. Covarrubias has arranged for one of the few Westerners on the island, the KLM representative who is there, to meet Hirschfeld and Flo at the boat. And he drives them the 90 miles to the village of Denpasar. Now, the 90 miles, I don't know how long that must have taken because right. There are no highways.
No. I was going to say 90 miles today. Okay, maybe it takes you an hour and a half. Maybe it's an hour 45.
Right.
Not in 1932 on the island of Bali. That's a much longer trip.
There would not be pay for it.
Did they have cars or would it have been a bicycle? Like a carriage?
I'm sure he had some sort of Jeep.
Okay.
I'm sure that there were very, Hirschfeld told me there were four Westerners on the
right.
whole island.
Right.
And, you know, they just got there by hook or crook. You know, it was 90 miles. So they, you know, we would probably find it very uncomfortable and very long. But in 1932 terms, it probably wasn't that right. uncomfortable right. or that long they because everything was.
They weren't missing heated seats or right. Spotify or anything like that.
They didn't have to worry about air conditioning because right, they didn't right. have it in any other
they
place.
They weren't missing it.
Yeah. But Hirschfeld says that when he gets to the village of Denpasar, I mean, he steps into the village, and as he writes later, that he knew his life would never be the same. The Balinese sun seemed to bleach out all color, leaving everything in pure line. The people became line drawings walking around. And we're getting, Hirschfeld's starting his decisive moment. You know, he would write later, I think it's no accident that rich, lush painting flourishes in the fog of Europe, while graphic art from Egypt across Persia to India and all the way to the Pacific Islands is influenced by the sun. It was in Bali that my attraction to drawing blossomed into an adoring love affair with line.
Right.
And I mean, it's, I only wish I could have, to be a fly on the wall, to see an artist have that kind of decisive moment. And this is just when he gets there.
Right.
He would spend 10 months in Bali. It was really an enriching experience for him. So he took on Covarrubias' house and everything. He had 7 houseboys.
That's actually less than I thought it was.
Well, he hired only one houseboy.
Right, but the houseboy hired his houseboy, and then that houseboy had to hire a houseboy as yes. well, and it just goes down the line. Matryoshka is in Bali.
And they essentially lived on Hirschfeld's porch. You know, Hirschfeld describes a time, you just couldn't really be alone because everybody was always there. It was a community.
Right.
And in Bali, Hirschfeld said there was no word for artist. Mm-hmm. He was.
Oh, yeah. What did they call him? The bearded one?
The bearded one.
Yeah.
The bearded one. And Hirschfeld learned a little bit of Malay, mm-hmm. you know, because he wanted to communicate. As being one of the few Westerners, he didn't know what to expect, and neither did the people in Bali.
Right.
And they had the other two Westerners that were there sort of showed them the ropes, but they were pretty much on their own. Mm-hmm. And Hirschfeld felt very comfortable there. He thought that he would say later that the humor of things in Bali and the design of them and the sculptural and plastic quality are really incredible. I don't know of any other place in the world like that.
Yeah. So tell us about the shadow puppets.
So he's fascinated by these because...
This is a big part of Balinese culture. And I think Pacific Island right. Art as well are the shadow puppets. But yeah, tell us about those. Because I know he had those in his house for a really long time.
Oh yeah, he lined his stairways right. in his home with shadow puppets. And even Brooks Atkinson thought that Hirschfeld's belief that caricature expresses the magic of a child's world derives from his belief in the folk art of Japanese shadow puppets. And of course, a shadow puppet, Hirschfeld, I can see learning from the shadow puppets. I mean, they're literally shadows. What you're watching is not the puppet itself, but the shadow it casts.
Right.
And Hirschfeld could see that you could express all of this character in essentially line. In right. black mass, black masses of black ink, is how Hirschfeld would translate it. And that, I don't know if it was a conscious thing. It was because he doesn't do, if he did caricature while he was in Bali, we have no record mm-hmm. of it. We have some sketchbooks. We have a sketchbook that's now in the collection of the New York Public Library of the Performing Arts. But in that sketchbook, there are some caricature-like sketches, but he did those for, he found a local craftsman who he thought had a natural gift for caricature. So Hirschfeld drew some essentially caricatured image of Balinese people, and this sculptor, this craftsman, made them into wooden sculptures.
Turned a little drawing Hirschfeld had done into this sculpture.
Right.
3D, caricature sculpture.
And Hirschfeld was a great collector of Asia and Pacific Rim mm-hmm. art. And he had these sculptures in his collection for the rest of his life. And he didn't, I knew about them. And I'm sure he told others about them. But you wouldn't have, the person who didn't know could look into these cases and you wouldn't say, oh, those are the ones that Hirschfeld drew.
Right.
They would seem very natural.
That information is not preserved. It's, right. It was never shown anywhere or anything like that. It's because they're not really Hirschfeld's, but at the same time, they are Hirschfeld sculptures.
Very much so.
I think they are.
Oh, yeah. No.
Although he didn't carve them. He's not the sculptor. Although he did start out as a sculptor, remember?
Yeah,
Before he was a painter.
It's all true.
Before he was a caricaturist, before he was a painter, he was a sculptor.
Right. And so maybe he, when he says a sculpture is just a drawing you could trip over in the dark, this is kind of he takes the drawing and turns, it's turned into a sculpture. You could trip over it. So in a way, his quip really becomes true. So he's painting watercolors there. Interestingly enough, he paints local scenes always with people in them.
Yeah, I was going to say, while that one water, at least the one we have of Tahiti, is that, it's like I don't know if it's a coconut tree or, some sort of palm tree jungle scene. All of the ones from Bali are of the citizens.
Right. People doing different things.
All of people, yeah. And you can really start to see, and we'll link to a bunch of these watercolors in the show notes, but you can really start to see how the details are disappearing from the watercolor.
Right.
They're still watercolor. They're still paintings. They're still that kind of traditional style paintings. But you can start to see where he's like, what can I leave out? Like you said, that sun has completely washed a lot of the details of things out.
Right.
And he's seeing black and white line drawings walking around in the village. And it's just interesting. I think you can really see it. There's some that you can really see that in where he's starting. He says, if you want to see great graphic art, look for pyramids.
Yes, it's very true.
The sun just bleaches all that detail out. And I think this is, like you said, the decisive moment. This is where he sees what you can get away with.
Right.
Like the shadow puppets. You don't need hardly any detail.
Right.
You need outlines. You need size. You need personality. You can make the shadow puppet bigger or smaller
Well, just by a flick of the wrist, really.
Right.
And the way that the shadow puppets are made, there's sort of all these sort of hinges where you can move different parts, but just by a flick of the wrist on the puppet itself, it's expressing something else, something different. And I think that leaves a mark on Hirschfeld, as I said, consciously, subconsciously, I don't know, but it shows up in his work
as soon
as he returns.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And I mean, when a collector sends Hirschfeld some photos of some of his Balinese paintings, he gets this in the 1970s, Hirschfeld responds saying, "The problem of placing the right line in the right place has absorbed all my interest across these many years. I'm still enchanted when an unaccountable line describes and communicates the inexplicable." And I think that is really sort of the motto or the what he learns in Bali.
Yeah.
That the line can do so much for him. And he described his paintings to me in Bali as drawings with color.
I think that's a better, I would agree. I think that's what I was maybe trying to say.
Right.
Is that they're turning into something else. They don't look the same
right.
anymore. Although they're paintings, and but they're definitely not caricatures. Something's missing. You know, something's kind of shifted.
Yes. And so he is, I mean, we think of Hirschfeld as the sophisticated, very American artist who is capturing the most American types of things, you know, movies, musical comedies, which is an American invention, and all these things American. But it really comes from this Pacific Island.
Yeah, and the Japanese woodcuts. And I mean, he's very influenced by so many different art styles.
No,
again, a story for another day, the Japanese woodcuts. We won't go into that. But Bali for sure. Yeah, the Pacific Island, African masks.
Well, I think Bali gives him real insight into the Japanese woodcuts so that he says, I'm much more influenced by the drawings of Hironobu, Utamaro, and Hokusai than I am by the painters of the West.
Yeah, you know, I think that's so evident.
Yeah, he had seen woodcuts as a child and was interested and sort of fascinated by them. But now, in a way, I think he's sort of seeing them come to life. He's seeing sort of what it was and how it was translated.
Yeah.
And his artist mind is doing the math, I guess is what I would say.
So Hirschfeld's been in Bali for a few months,
yeah.
at least. He's really starting to figure all this line stuff out, if that's what we want to call it.
Right.
You know, he's having he's kind of having a moment and, you know, transforming as an artist. And then something really wild happens.
I think it only could happen to Al Hirschfeld.
I think if someone else had told me this story, if I didn't trust you, I don't think I would believe it. Yeah. It's so ridiculous. That's how big this twist is, I think.
Yeah.
I'd be like, this was made for a movie and it's a bad movie because I don't believe this.
Right. It's an unlikely plot twist. I mean, William Saroyan in 1941 says, you know, in his introduction to Harlem says that, you know, wherever Hirschfeld goes, someone's trying to always offer him the key to something.
And it's not, he's not wrong.
Yeah, it really was a case. And this is an example of that.
This episode of the Hirschfeld Century podcast is brought to you by the brand new book, The American Theater, as seen by Hirschfeld, 1962 to 2002. This is the largest collection of Hirschfeld's theater drawings that has ever been published. Ever. You're going to see classic Hirschfeld drawings, old favorites, obscure shows no one's ever heard of, and shows that only lasted one night. It's all included in this book. You can head over to our online shop, alhirschfeldfoundationshop.org, and you can either search American Theater, but when you log on to the shop, it's going to be the first thing you see. There's going to be a pop-up that says, "Do you want to buy this new book? Because it's really great. The American Theater, as seen by Hirschfeld, 1962 to 2002. If you order soon, we'll even include a special little gift from the Al Hirschfeld Foundation that is exclusive only to our shop. alhirschfeldfoundationshop.org. You're going to want to check out The American Theater, as seen by Hirschfeld, 1962 to 2002. And now, back to the show.
A cruise ship docks. And on that cruise ship is Charlie Chaplin and his brother Sidney. And they are going to stay in what was some sort of hotel in Bali.
And they're on some sort of round the world cruise.
This
is like a TCM cruise of 1932 or something.
Hardly a TCM cruise. But it's an early round the world cruise. Chaplin writes, I believe in his autobiography, that it was a little bit difficult because wherever he went, there was an American Express agent who met him at the docks and would want to introduce him to all the local potentates who would often try to serve him meals that they thought Chaplin would like. They tried to serve Western food to him.
Oh. And he wasn't having a real experience.
No, right, and that's what right. he was trying to...
It's like going to Olive Garden in Times Square.
Yes.
Right.
And thinking that you've had Italian
food. Right. Oh, I had New York Italian food. I went to the Olive Garden in Times Square. This is what Charlie Chaplin's doing on this Round the World cruise. And in 1932, Charlie Chaplin is a huge star.
Star in the world.
The star. This is not... Charlie Chaplin gets here in 1970 and his fame has faded. And no, this is Kim Kardashian coming into our office right now.
I would argue it's even bigger than
Kim Kardashian?
Because all you need to do is show the hat, the baggy pants, the big shoes, maybe a cane. Everybody knows.
All you need is the outline, although maybe you just need the outline for Kim Kardashian as well. But anyway, the brothers Chaplin are on the island of Bali. Charlie, at this point, if I can tell a tale of my own, David loves when I tell Herschel stories in my own voice.
It may even be accurate.
At this point, Charlie's like... I am so sick of all this. Olive Garden, they're feeding me all over the world. I just want to have a real experience. Like, it's the kid that's like, I'm going to run away from my parents on this trip and have a real experience.
And then he gets a note.
Which I have right here.
Let me tell you, folks, online archives are the greatest thing ever.
This
comes from the Chaplin Archives.
This is from the Chaplin Archives. It's on a stationery that says Bali Hotel, Den Pasar, 1930, and you can add in what year of the 30 it is, you know. So I'll try to read this. It's in cursive, but I'm good at that. But some of the words were a little interesting. So here we go. This is from, I'll start by saying it's from Alan Flo Hirschfeld.
Correct.
Brothers Chaplin. Our landlord has a pig he'd like to roast, and we have a 150-pound turtle that has lived long enough now. Can you join us tomorrow night in consuming them? We shall eat to the tune of a Balinese orchestra and 50 or so natives inhaling rice. If this appeals to you, tell the messenger in your best Malay, ya. If not agreeable, tidak. Al and Flo Hirschfeld.
Who knows what Chaplin thought when he got this note?
Oh my gosh, I'd love to see that.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, he's excited. I think
he would be excited to find. I don't know on such.
What I don't know, and I never asked Hirschfeld, which I regret, is had he met Chaplin before this?
Right.
And my guess is, if they had met, it was in a social situation. Were they good friends? They were not good friends. I don't think they knew each other that well.
Right.
But Hirschfeld would know Chaplin, as like you said, he was internationally known almost instantly. But I also think that Chaplin would have a pretty good idea of who Hirschfeld was because he was in New York. You know, you could not open a paper on Sunday and not see a Hirschfeld drawing. You know, we're talking before 1931. There was some paper every weekend in New York, every Sunday in New York, in which there was a Hirschfeld theater drawing. He would have also known Hirschfeld's posters for all of Chaplin's friends and really rivals.
Charlie Chase, Buster Keaton.
Laurel and Hardy.
Right. All those posters. He did a, was it 1927?
1927, he did a page in a film yearbook. You know, sort of one of these, we call them yearbooks, but they were really portfolios that they gave to movie theaters to tell them what movies were coming that year. And he did they were re-releasing Chaplin's 1919 film, Sunnyside. And it was the first time that Hirschfeld published a drawing of Chaplin.
Mm. Sunnyside was my first Chaplin film. I watched it because of this yearbook insert. The yearbook drawing.
And would you encourage others to do that?
Yes, it's very funny. I love the coffee part. There's a little bit he does with the coffee and the sugar cubes, and it kills me every time. It's his face. He's just so cute. It's his face, the expressions. But Sunnyside was my first Chaplin. So I do. It's on YouTube. I used to be, at least. It's only like 20 minutes. It's a short.
It's not his very first drawing of Chaplin.
Right.
We have a... a caricature study that he does at the Art Students League, an etching, that has heads of John Barrymore, William Hart, Eddie Cantor, Patsy Kelly,
yeah,
and in sort of the lower center, Chaplin. Mm-hmm. I mean, again, he shows just sort of a little bit of the face and the hat, and you know right away it's Chaplin.
Yeah, and of course, his first published caricature is of Sidney,
right,
Chaplin, his half brother, who is in Bali with him.
Right. So the brothers Chaplin come to Hirschfeld's home.
So they take him up on his offer on the 150-pound turtle.
They have to sort of slip away from the American Express agent.
There is an American Express agent in
Bali.
Oh, man. Yeah, he's got to get out of there.
And he slips away, and he gets to Hirschfeld's home, and they have this great feast. Mm-hmm. The one that Hirschfeld describes. And there's a big fire,
yeah.
And the music is playing, and girls with, as Hirschfeld says, their bared mammaries, get up and dance.
It's very scientific.
And then they sit down, and Chaplin's so taken by it, he gets up and sort of recreates the dance, yeah, much to the delight of everybody there. I mean, it's a great night. Yeah. Everybody has a good time.
And of course, no one there knows who Charlie Chaplin is.
Yes.
As that iconic, you know, Charlie Chaplin.
I think from reading what Hirschfeld wrote about this incident and also talking to him about it, you know, Chaplin was excited that he was not known.
Yeah. I think he mentions that in his autobiography as well. Yeah. Chaplin's biography.
Right. Exactly. Chaplin's so taken by it that he decides to get off the cruise ship, and he moves into a cottage in the compound that Hirschfeld has. So now Hirschfeld has two tenants,
mm-hmm,
you know, Charlie and Sidney Chaplin. They are now six Westerners on the island of Bali. And I mean, only Hirschfeld could have attracted the biggest entertainer in the world.
Yeah.
And they're there for 2 weeks.
And I think Chaplin likes Bali because, like you said, because he's not Charlie Chaplin. He's the funny one, or the trickster.
No, they refer to him as the funny one.
Funny one. Tell the story again of the hat trick.
Oh, yeah.
Because I love this story.
I just love
picturing it. You can totally see it.
Hirschfeld had these seven houseboys. Mm-hmm. So Chaplin wants to test whether... Are they laughing at Chaplin because he's Chaplin, or are they laughing at him because he's funny?
Right, which are two different things.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And he was interested in being funny,
right?
He wasn't impressed with by being Chaplin,
right?
And so he does a trick where you put the hat on your head and it pops off,
right?
You know, like
so good.
And he does it for the houseboys, and they think it's the funniest thing they've ever seen, and they all try to start doing it themselves. So seven Balinese young men are trying to do Chaplin's hat trick. I can only imagine what it was like.
So good.
Perhaps we know that Chaplin, like Hirschfeld, is a home movie buff.
Mm.
And they take movies while they're there. We have found that someone is making a film.
That's already done. That was years ago.
It's never been released as far as I can tell.
Oh, really?
No one's... I've never seen it.
I thought we watched it one day.
No, we watched a clip of...
Okay.
Well, the movie...
This is... We're talking about... It's someone's made a little short of Chaplin and Bali, all the footage.
Well, it was supposed to be a documentary because the premise of the documentary is that the visit to Bali is a very important experience for Chaplin.
For sure. Because he knows he's fun. It's, again, that decisive moment he has. Well,
but he also understands the difference between the haves and the have-nots. You know, it gives him a more political edge.
Mm.
You know, it's so interesting. You know, here's this sort of paradise. Cove Rubius comes as a caricaturist and leaves as an anthropologist. Hirschfeld comes as a painter and leaves as a caricaturist. Chaplin comes as a comedian, but he leaves with a conscience in a way that he didn't have before, according to these documentary filmmakers. Mm-hmm. And what's interesting is... that there is film of Charlie and Sidney Chaplin in Bali And it's very likely that it's Hirschfeld holding the movie camera.
Yeah, that would be my guess. It makes sense.
It does make sense. Yeah. Could you have the houseboys do it? Sure, yeah, you could do that.
That's totally possible.
But it's much more likely that it's Hirschfeld holding the camera.
Yeah, agree.
And so, I mean, I would love to see more of the footage. Mm-hmm. I would love to see... Hirschfeld takes no footage of Chaplin.
Mm.
And I think that is really...
It's in keeping with Hirschfeld, though. He doesn't care. It's just his friend.
Right.
It's not, oh, let me record. Charlie Chaplin's here. Let me get on my camera. That's what we would do. Right?
Some of us. You would be taking a selfie with Charlie, you know, without a doubt.
Yeah, for sure.
Hirschfeld never felt that need.
No.
And, you know, what Hirschfeld took films of were of Balinese culture. The dances, the you know, things like that. So so Chaplin's there. They're loving it.
Yeah, they have a great time. They have to cut their trip short, though, because Charlie gets dysentery.
Right.
He has to leave the island. He has to go see a real doctor.
But before he does leave.
Before he leaves.
He buys many of Hirschfeld's watercolors of Bali. And he frames them and puts them in his home. We know that because there are photographs of it. And several years ago, there was a museum in Switzerland that reconstituted the Charlie Chaplin art collection. Mm-hmm. And there were these paintings in there.
Right.
And wonderful paintings. They wanted to know the whereabouts of some of the paintings because they had been dispersed when he got divorced from Paulette Goddard.
Right. I thought she had a bunch of them as well. Yeah.
And it was actually an exhibition not of Chaplin's collection, but of Paulette Goddard her husband's collection.
Oh, gotcha.
And she had several of the Hirschfeld watercolors.
But it's the money that Chaplin gives him for these watercolors that then allows Hirschfeld to get off the island.
Yes. Because
he's been there a long time now. This is the longest he's been away from Broadway?
Yes. Yeah. 10 months.
10 months. That's a long time. It's almost a year.
Yes.
And he's probably like, okay, I've done it. Now I can probably get back home.
Who knows? I didn't ask him what inspired him to leave.
Mm-hmm.
But he had the money. And look, Hirschfeld loved the world he was in.
Right.
And I think this, and now he was interested in image and pure line.
He has a new idea. And
right.
I have to believe he was kind of itching to get back and kind of experiment in a different way now.
Exactly.
By getting back to the caricature stuff.
When he gets back to New York, within a year, there is a big Balinese exposition at the Waldorf Astoria. And he shows his paintings. Some of his paintings there. It's the last time he would exhibit those works until a 1998 retrospective that I put together. The works had never been, you know, in the interim had not been seen. Hirschfeld gives up painting after this. He never paints another landscape again. He's only interested in people, but he's interested primarily in image and pure line. And that's what he devotes his energy to.
Yeah.
Because he's had this moment. He's no longer unsure of where he's going. He's very clear on what he's doing.
Right.
One of the first drawings that Hirschfeld draws when he gets back is a drawing of Fanny Bryce and George Jessel doing the show between movies at the Paramount Theater. And he poses Fanny Bryce and George Jessel as shadow puppets.
Absolutely. No question about it.
He replaces the bright sunlight with a bright spotlight.
Yep.
And you can see their shadows very much like they would be shadow puppets. And it's one of the clearest indications of the impact that this trip has.
Yeah.
And that drawing is in many of the books. It's in the Hirschfeld Century for sure. As Fate is a Wonderful Thing. And in 2015, that drawing resurfaced.
I remember the day because it was so early in my tenure. It might even be 2014.
Could have been.
I mean, because
it was early.
And I didn't understand why you were so excited.
Oh God.
You know, I didn't understand what this was. Now I do. And after I did, once I kind of learned, you know, everything. But yeah, I remember them kind of taking it out and the original drawing of Fanny Bryce and George Jessel was there. And yeah, that's a big moment.
It was a draw. It was a contemporary art gallery in New York that contacted me and they said they had a Hirschfeld. Could I come in and take a look at it? I'll be honest with you. I thought it was going to be a print or something.
Because right. That's most of the time. That is what it is. People say they have something and we're like, okay, we'll take a look. And
yes.
Interesting, but no thank you.
Did not expect it. And then if it is a drawing, you know, it could have been a Friday drawing of actor you never heard of. Is it
this iconic moment, like, you know, game-changing moment? No, not usually.
I don't think I have a very good poker face. Because when they brought that drawing out, I just couldn't believe it. This was like one of those things you think, I'm not even going to wish for it because it's never going to happen. Mm-hmm. This obscure 1933 drawing.
Right.
And 1932 drawing. Who's going to have it?
Right.
And there it is in excellent condition. It turns out that Hirschfeld gave the drawing to a fellow artist that he knew, a woman. And she had had it all of her life, and she had passed away, and her children wanted to sell it.
Mm.
And they had brought it to this gallery because I'm sure her work was probably in keeping with this gallery.
Right.
So I told them the significance of it. And what was their question?
How much?
Yeah, how much? I said, well, about $30,000.
Oh, yeah.
At that time, I said, it would be more now.
I would say more now, yeah.
Now it would be a lot more. But I said $30,000. I don't think there was a lip smacking, but could easily believe
it. I remember you were very excited and I didn't You know, I was like, I don't get it.
Yeah.
I don't know who Fanny Bryce or George Jessel are.
Or where Bali is.
Right. What's Bali? Yeah.
Folks, I started with a block of clay. She didn't know anything. Yep. But, you know, that's not the end of the Bali story in Hirschfeld's career. It shows up in a couple of other places. In 1941, he does his classic book, Harlem as Seen by Hirschfeld. And everyone says, oh, it's just color lithographs of Harlem.
Mm.
And indeed, 20 of the 24 are of Harlem.
Yes.
But four of the lithographs in this book are scenes of Bali.
Yeah.
Then in 1946, when he is in Philadelphia with Sweet By and By as it dies its slow death, and he has this very famous lunch with S.J. Perlman and Ted Patrick, the editor of Holiday Magazine, and they start talking about places. Holiday Magazine sends writers to exotic places.
It's a travel magazine.
It's a travel magazine with a budget to send, you know, essentially they would send writers and a big budget with them, and they could do great work. And so they got great writers to work for them. Patrick was interested in having S.J. Perlman go someplace. And Hirschfeld starts talking about, I don't know what came first, but he says that he thinks that they should send Sid to Tahiti because he would have a field day with it, because S.J. Perlman was never better than when he was putting something down and sort of complaining about it.
Yeah, he would love Tahiti.
He would love Tahiti.
Because he would hate it.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's why he would love it.
And he then starts talking about Bali and how wonderful it is. And it's right around this time that Patrick decides, you guys should go, you know, he says to Perlman that you should go around the world. Would you do that? You know, around the world in 80 days.
And take Hirschfeld with you.
Perlman says, I'll consider doing it if Al can come with me.
That's a good friend.
Right. That is a good friend because they wanted to protect themselves. Yeah. They didn't want to go back to New York with a flop musical. And so they never go to Bali on that trip.
Right.
And in fact, Hirschfeld never returns to Bali consciously.
Yeah.
You know,
to preserve that memory. It was so perfect. You don't want to ruin it by going back and finding it's different than how you remember it.
Exactly. In 1970, he writes that he never wanted to stay at the Bali Hilton.
Yeah. He, like, when I think of Bali now, all I think of is yoga retreats. You know? Hirschfeld would hate that.
Right.
Now it's Tahiti, I think. You know?
Well, it's no longer this sort of primitive, untouched
there's
paradise.
So few places left.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. I mean, Hirschfeld was lucky. He lived at a time when there were still sort of undiscovered worlds on the planet. He's not also done with Chaplin. I mean, although he hadn't drawn Chaplin a lot before this experience, in 1940, he is asked to do five different drawings for The Great Dictator.
Speaking of Chaplin becoming a little bit more political,
exactly.
More, conscious of that.
Exactly. So, and I mean, the images are used on lobby cards, European posters, souvenir programs. And then in 1942, Hirschfeld goes to Hollywood to interview Chaplin. Yeah. And Chaplin is hard to get a hold of because Chaplin is Charlie Chaplin. You know, he's still a big deal.
Yeah, still king of the castle.
But when Chaplin finds out that Hirschfeld wants to talk to him, he sends for him. Mm. And they spend a wonderful afternoon together. And Hirschfeld writes about it, and he talks about the night that Chaplin came to his home. Mm. And he writes, "It was then that I realized that the mustache, baggy pants, and oversized shoes were of no more importance to Chaplin than the type of quill used by Shakespeare or a frame on a Picasso." Mm-hmm. You know, he saw that what Chaplin was doing was pure.
Yeah.
And those were things that dressed it up, but it didn't change the nature of what he was doing.
Which is what the people of Bali saw in him. Right. As well. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. And there's two great drawings. So that he did that for the New York Times Magazine section. Yes. He wrote that piece, Hirschfeld did. Mm-hmm. Correct?
Yeah. Wrote and illustrated.
And then there's two illustrations from it. The one is a beautiful smiling portrait of his big smile that looks exactly like what one he did for The Great Dictator.
Right. It's sort of The Great Dictator without the costume.
Without the costume, yeah. And then, but then the really great drawing, I think, from that piece is it's Chaplin and he's doing this dance. He's in motion. He's in the middle of the air and he's dancing. And I don't think it says this in the magazine, but on the original drawing, Hirschfeld has written a caption in quotes, "and a Balinese girl dances like this." Mm. Or it's something to that effect. And it's him quoting Chaplin from Bali. Right. So he's remembered, or he made Charlie do it again even. He said, what do you remember from Bali? Or maybe they were reminiscing. And
right, I'm sure they were reminiscing.
And he gets up and, oh yeah, I remember when they were dancing and it was like this. And that's what Hirschfeld chooses to draw for this article.
Right.
And it's just that I love that drawing and I love that caption. I don't think it's in the article though.
It's not in the article, I don't believe.
So you have to see the original drawing to get that reference, because I don't think anybody else would get it, but now you all know. Now we know, you all know. It's of Chaplin doing one of those Balinese dances from that orchestra, from that the fire dance, the whatever they were doing.
Yeah. Oh, without a doubt. I know we started talking about Chaplin. I do want to finish about Bali.
Sure.
Because while they don't go to Bali, when S.J. Perlman takes his family on a round the world trip for Swiss Family Perlman, they do go to Bali, and Hirschfeld, who's not on the trip, does a series of drawings of one's called a Balinese pastiche that shows all these different images of people, not of the landscape, but the people of Bali. No. It shows up again when he returns to printmaking with the Rhythm series in 1969, 1970. Of the 10 images that he does, one of them is a Balinese dancer, Lagong. So it would prove to be something that never left him.
Absolutely. Oh, absolutely. Definitely.
And just like Chaplin in some ways never left him, because although he doesn't do a lot of drawings, I mean, save for The Great Dictator, that was the only drawing he did specifically for a new Chaplin film.
And one of the kind of last large Chaplin films that would require a caricature,
Right, definitely.
Sure, yes, there's Limelight, there's definitely. Other, but not in that classic Chaplin sense, I think. But he would draw him many times.
Right. And at first he sort of shows up, there's a drawing of a politician speaking and there's people sort of falling asleep while he's doing it. And there's Chaplin in there and Fred Allen and Wallace Beery. And they're all sort of falling asleep while this guy talks. In Show Business Is No Business, the experimental director is talking to... he's talking about how all these celebrities want to work with the experimental director. So the experimental director is talking to Joan Crawford, Charlie Chaplin, Groucho Marx, and Eddie Cantor.
That's funny. But he'll do single portraits of Chaplin, especially for prints.
Oh, yeah.
Come the 70s, 80s.
Right. Well,
all the rest of his career.
Even a re-release of Chaplin films in 1972, they get Hirschfeld to do a drawing. And the poster just has Chaplin's back. And you see Chaplin from the back as drawn by Hirschfeld, a very classic image.
One of the prints I have hanging in my living room.
And you can get it too by going to Al Hirschfeld Foundation shop.
There's only one or two of those left in the shop. So that was a very popular, it's a classic image.
It is a classic
from the back. That's how all the movies end. You know, it's, that's the classic image.
And we're not the only ones who think Hirschfeld drew classic images of Charlie Chaplin, because the U.S. government comes to Hirschfeld and he does a drawing of Charlie Chaplin for the Stars of the Silent Screen stamps that were released in 1994. But yes, mostly he's being drawn for prints.
Retrospective.
For Time magazine in 1998, Artist of the 20th Century, Chaplin smack dab in the middle of it. So, yeah, he does a lot of drawings of Chaplin very after the fact.
Yeah, it's just a weird part of this Bali story.
Right.
You know?
Right.
I think it's the great twist.
Without a doubt.
I know this is, we've told a lot here, but it's a big story. And it's a real, like we said in the beginning, it's a really important story. I think we could do... I mean, I think this could obviously be a 2 or 3 part episode.
Right. You can tell Hirschfeld's story without talking about Cal Channing or Zira Mostel, Judy Garland.
But not without talking about Charlie Chaplin.
Arguably, I think you could tell the story.
I'm teasing. Yes, no, it's not integral.
But if you take Bali out of the Hirschfeld story, you're never going to know who he is or who he was as an artist.
You're missing a really big part of the story.
Yeah,
absolutely.
It is, when I say it's the moment of before and after, it really is.
It really is.
Hirschfeld comes back and he realizes what he's doing. He said in the 30s, I learned what I was doing.
Yeah, he commits to that caricature, image, and pure line. That's it.
And soon thereafter, he starts seeing the people look like his drawings rather than the other way around.
Right.
He does his first drawings of the Marx Brothers within 18 months of returning.
Yeah.
And of course, that would change not only Hirschfeld's life, but the Marx Brothers as well.
Mm-hmm.
So all the things that we know, the things that we really know of Hirschfeld are all post-Bali.
Everything really starts here.
Right.
I think the train really starts to get going.
It's an out-of-town tryout.
Yeah.
And not to say that there aren't great works from the 1920s, 1930s.
David and I will write a whole huge coffee table book. It'll just be every single caricature from the 20s.
Book publishers, call us. We want to do a book of just the 20s.
We love them all.
Yes.
But this really, after this, now we're really cooking.
Right.
Now we've got Hirschfeld the caricaturist.
Right.
Yeah.
And Hirschfeld comes back a different person, not just as an artist. Well, this is sort of related to an artist. When he comes back, he has a little bit of that anthropologist vibe to him, because the first project he starts working on is the Manhattan Oasis book. And of course, almost as soon as he comes back, he's doing drawings of the theater, because, you know, everybody's got to eat.
That Chaplin money only goes so far.
Yes. But it was, I think Bali was an experience that stayed with Hirschfeld his whole life. And even though he'd been everywhere on the planet and had done many incredible things, it was the trip that really he always looked to.
Gave us Hirschfeld.
Gave us, definitely.
All right. Let's stop there, because, again, we could go into 3-parters here.
We could just wax rhapsodic about Hirschfeld until the cows come home.
Well, thank you for listening. I hope you enjoyed it. I love this story. I just think the Chaplin part is so funny. But you also get to learn a lot more about the art, because, right. I mean, we've dropped almost no names, although we dropped the biggest name in 1932, we really haven't talked about, you know, like you said, Carol Channing or whatever. So
this isn't Celebrity.
Yeah. So I hope you enjoyed this. You get a little bit more of the artist in this episode.
Sure.
And I was very excited to talk about Bali.
She's been wanting to do this for a long time.
I have. I've been saying, Bali, people need to know. So... what do we need to run down here? You can find us on Facebook,
yes.
The Al Hirschfeld Foundation, Twitter and Instagram at Al Hirschfeld, YouTube channel, Al Hirschfeld Foundation, I believe, just Al Hirschfeld. If you type in Al Hirschfeld Foundation or Al Hirschfeld, you're going to find us.
Yes.
Don't worry. if you have any questions or you love this episode, send it to info@alhirschfeldfoundation.org if you have suggestions. And that,
a suggestion for an episode.
That. Oh my gosh, would love that. Please tell us what to talk about. We will.
We have plenty of ideas, but we want to hear what you want to hear about.
And then our shop, of course, alhirschfeldfoundationshop.org. We've got all of our prints. We talked about that Chaplin print. It's the iconic one. What do we have, Chaplin, that's in the store? We have Comedians at Lunch.
Oh, we have merch, individual.
But I'm talking about merch.
Oh, yes.
We have Comedians at Lunch, which is W.C. Fields, Buster Keaton, Chaplin, and Groucho. I love that. That's one of my favorites.
Yes.
I do love that piece. It's very
My wife has a t-shirt of that.
Oh, and Comedians at Lunch.
She wears it all the time.
It's a great one. It's a great one. So check out the shop, of course, and tell your friends about the podcast.
Oh, always. Don't forget to look in the show notes to get links to all the images we have discussed.
Yes. That's going to be the best way to follow along.
You will be able to get a link to the note that Charlie Chaplin received. So if you want to see what Hirschfeld wrote to Chaplin, you want to see if Catherine really read it correctly, that you can do it.
I did, because I practiced several times this morning. All right. Well, thank you for listening, and we will see you next time.
Take care. Bye-bye.